On the show today, we have Mike Higgins of Mike Higgins & Associates talking about the 7 tips for effective incentive plans. Check it out. You had a recent article in CU Water Cooler Daily Links about 7 tips for effective incentive plans, and that really kind of piqued my interest because this is a big topic right now, because there's a lot of turnover in the industry right now, especially at the executive level, and this kind of plays right into the part of it. Can you give us a quick summary of what this article is all about besides the title?
Yeah, you know, I think obviously, as you've noted, incentives are a big deal, and they're part of today's compensation environment. It's part of total compensation in addition to base pay,
yep,
and benefits package. But it's important that it be properly designed. That's where I see most of the failures in the plans. They're really well-intentioned plans, yeah, and they think we want to get this, but they don't think about the design. And I kind of liken it to like an automobile. Car is easy to drive. You step on the accelerator, you speed up, you go, you get where you want to be. Well, you know, there's a lot of engineering that happens when you step on that gas pedal. And I think a well-designed incentive plan allows you to get to your destination, mm-hmm, without having too much damage or, you know, running things off into the ditch.
Exactly. Well, let's go into a few of these 7 items that you listed here. Number one, results based. It's effort without results are meaningless. This is something that you say in there.
Yeah, yeah. The kind of the classic. Don't confuse activity with achievement.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, I think the challenge is that sometimes I'll see incentive plans where we're paying out dollars of compensation or incentive compensation, and we don't have anything to show for it. And at the end of the day, any type of incentive plan should do one of two things. It should either lead to more revenue growth or some type of productivity gain.
Okay.
And if it's not doing that, the members who are literally directly subsidizing our entire cost of operations, cost of operations just went up, and we put, you know, dollars in people's pockets and have nothing to show for it. At the end of the day, I'm big on managing activity. I think that's important. But if we don't get the results that we're looking for, then we kind of got to ask, what are we doing here?
Exactly. That's the bottom line. All right. Number two, minimum threshold. You're talking about acceptable performance here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think too often incentives turn into entitlements. And I like to really think of bonus or incentive compensation more in the term of we've got to actually get something accomplished. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be a threshold that recognizes, listen, in exchange for your base compensation, we expect A, B, C, and D. Once we get beyond a certain level of performance, then we'll talk about sharing something above and beyond for doing that.
Gotcha. Number three, aligned. Align your rewards budget with strategic objective. Make sure everybody knows. Can you expand on this one a little bit?
Yeah. You know, I think it's important, you know, like any well-coached team, the players want to know where we're headed, what we're trying to get accomplished during the year. And sometimes the incentive plans are so narrowly focused that we never get really a feel for what that is. So The first thing is, when I hear the word budget or plan, I'm really thinking in the current year, what are we trying to get accomplished this year? And that should really be strategic objectives. Year one of our longer-term plan. So by definition, budget should be victory. And sometimes I don't see that. Sometimes budget is, well, it's just a worst case scenario that we're going to avoid. But if it's truly what we're trying to get accomplished, then we've got good alignment and we've creating focus. Mm-hmm. And I always like to say, when you have focus, I think that increases the probability of success. Doesn't guarantee it, but it increases our probability dramatically.
I like that one a lot. Number four, meaningful size. Find the sweet spot with your rewards. Kind of like, it sounds like kind of like the Goldilocks syndrome. Not too high, not too small, not too big. Just something just right in the middle.
Yeah, I know, because, you know, no one wants to be told, hey, our plan this year is a big challenge, and we're going to work really hard, and when we get there, you're going to get a $25 gift card. You know, that just doesn't get too many people really excited. So, you know, by default, if you're tracking toward your strategic objectives, your budget or plan should be victory, financial victory, getting something accomplished. Mm-hmm. And in exchange for getting to financial victory, you should have a market-based reward. And typically what I see in the industry is staff-level positions will see somewhere maybe between 3 to 5% of salary for hitting the objective, which is about 2 weeks of pay.
Yeah.
The supervisory or managerial, maybe 6 to 8% of salary. And then you get into your leadership and what I call true revenue-producing people. Mm-hmm. That's going to be somewhere between 10 to 30% of salary.
Wow. Okay.
And those, yeah, I see a reaction, and that's what happens when I work with compensation committee members. It's a shock.
Oh, really?
Well, back in my day, we were lucky just to have a job.
You know? Pat on the back.
Yeah, and our bonus was a continued year of employment the next year. But this is what's going on in the marketplace, yeah. And this is what credit unions are competing against other banks and even salespeople in other industries.
Exactly.
And so, you know, if you're not competing at a relevant level, you know, you're gonna struggle.
Yeah, you're gonna lose a few folks, big time.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, number five, self-funded. Share a percentage of the income generated, kind of a reward pool of self-funding. This is a kind of interesting one here.
Yeah, you know, going back to that concept of baseline, and there's a minimum level of acceptable performance, mm-hmm. I think of that in terms of a baseline says, hey, this is a level that we expect out of base compensation. Once we clear that, let's direct maybe 20 or 30 cents of every dollar that we exceed these objectives from an income production perspective,
right. Yeah.
Into a reward pool. The credit union then keeps the other 70 to 80%. So everybody wins. You know, you put a plan like this in front of your comp committee or a board and an examiner and show how it's self-funding and how the credit union is winning at the same time the mm-hmm. employees are, it turns out to be a good deal. And if you have a really good year and you got a lot of extra income, give it back to the members in a supplemental dividend or give back or fund a foundation or whatever you want mm-hmm. to do with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see those stories all the time, especially this time of year with a lot of the credit unions with their dividends reports. Okay, number six, no cap. What does this mean? Avoid artificial or arbitrary limits. What is this? Cover.
Yeah, you know, really what we're trying to talk about is tapping into the untapped human potential. I think too often I'll see incentive plans where they say, well, we're going to stop at this level. This is the most we're going to pay or this is the level of performance.
Right.
And really that secret code for we don't know what we're doing. and if as long as we don't pay any more than this, I'm not going to get in any trouble.
Right.
And I think that's the quickest way. To ruin the ability to tap into people's potential mm-hmm. is to put those artificial stops. If it's self-funding, as long as we're improving, who wins? Everybody wins the better we do.
No doubt. All right, last one here. Number seven, balanced measures. Checks and balances here, it sounds like.
Yeah. And that's probably one of the biggest pitfalls I see. Again, someone will come up with an idea for something that, again, is very well-intentioned. We'd like to grow this area.
Yeah.
But your employees are smart, you know, and they're going to figure out, well, gee, I can maximize this area at the expense of another area. Perfect example. Easy to grow loans if we say that yield and credit quality is not important. You know, here, take the money and don't bother paying us back. You know, get a lot of loan growth that way, but it has back-end consequences.
Exactly.
You can grow shares or deposits very easily. Let's run out a CD with a 20% interest rate on it. Oh, great. You know, we can grow, but that's going to kill us.
I like that one.
Yeah, that'd be good for the consumer. Yeah. And the same thing, non-interest income. We could invest in different product lines or product channels mm-hmm. by spending a lot of money. But if the additional revenue doesn't offset that investment, we find ourselves in a bad situation. So I think it's important for everything that you're trying to have a back-end counterbalance to make sure we don't give something away unnecessarily.
Gotcha. Excellent. Words to live by, sir. Anything else to wrap up, Mike? These are seven great items to live by here. Anything else to wrap up?
I just appreciate the opportunity to come on and share some of the concepts that we do when we work with credit unions. And I think the tips hopefully will help people when they're designing their plans, design them better.
Yeah, these are awesome. These are awesome. That's why I wanted to talk to you about them. They really like stood out. So like, let's talk to Mike.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You know what? Let's get you back on the show again. This was fun.